Greetings and salutations, darklings. We are Chell and Tori, and welcome to Vampires Ruined My Life.
Tonight, we're going to discuss the 2021 movie Black as Night. Black as Night was written by Sherman Payne and directed by Marit Le Gau. It was released on October 1st, 2021 on Prime Video by Amazon Studios.
I think it's worth mentioning that Sherman Payne worked on the last couple of seasons of Shameless, US version, when it was really getting into Chicago South Side Black politics through main characters V and Liam Gallagher. Black as Night is his first feature to be made into a film, and this is the first feature for director Marit Le Gau.
Yeah, so, I never watched Shameless. I don't know anything about it.
I adore it. It's probably one of my absolute most favorite television shows. Nice. And it covers a lot of topics that are very relevant, and they get into like the gentrification side of Chicago for several seasons. In fact, once it gets introduced, they never like let it go, because it is and continues to still be like an issue.
Totally.
But yeah, V, who's the neighbor of the Gallaghers, is a Black woman married to a white man. But she has two twins who are very Black, you know, and so she, for kind of like their sake and such, gets recruited to really get into the local neighborhood politics.
Okay.
And Liam Gallagher is the only Black child of an all-white Irish family. They're like the main family of Shameless. Okay. And he, in the last like couple of seasons, particularly because he's a preteen, starts looking for Black heroes, you know, and Black people and to look up to.
Sure.
Because he knows that he can't look to his family for that. So his journey is very, very interesting. So I think when I looked up Sherman Payne, I was like, oh. And if you have seen Shameless, going into this movie makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
There will be a relevant theme.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, racism is a huge theme of the movie. So, yeah, and how it affects modern day because of all the stuff that happened historically.
Right.
So we'll just quickly go through the main cast of the movie. First, there's Aja Cooper as Shauna. She played Kia Williams on the show All American. Haven't seen it, don't know anything about it, but that seems to be her biggest role. She's also appeared in Snowfall, Chicago Med, and The Fosters.
Then we have Fabrizio Guido as Pedro. He was in the movie World War Z and played Mikey Gutierrez on the show Mr. Iglesias.
And then there's Keith David as Babino. Keith David is probably the biggest name actor in this movie. He appeared in the movie The Thing.
Ooh.
Yeah. I know him best as Elroy from Community's final season. The final season was not good, but it had nothing to do with Keith David or the character Elroy. The writers just had no idea what to do with the cast anymore, and they added two new people and still had nothing for them to do. So I enjoyed him on that show, but that whole season is kind of a mess, and I generally don't rewatch it. He's been in tons of stuff, including Reality Bites, Armageddon, Barbershop, and a recent episode of Leverage Redemption, in which he plays Elliot Spencer's dad, in which we learn that Elliot was adopted. And Hardison is not happy to be just finding that out.
In which Tori can bring everything back to Leverage.
I mean, it's relevant. It's one of his most recent credits. And Leverage is an amazing show. And if you have not watched it, I highly recommend it. It's a bunch of thieves fighting evil rich people and capitalism.
Keith David is also a very prolific voice actor, and roles he's best known for are the president in Rick and Morty, King Andreas in Amphibia, Glossarik in Star versus the Forces of Evil, Dr. Facilier in The Princess and the Frog, Goliath in Gargoyles, and he provides the voice of David Anderson in the Mass Effect video games.
Nice.
Like, Keith David is just hands down one of the most prolific actors of our time.
Yeah, he has a very long IMDb page. Mm-hmm. He's been in a lot of stuff.
So then we have Mason Beauchamp as Chris, Abigail as Grania,
And then there's Derek Roberts as Steven. He's also been in a lot of things, just kind of a lot of one-offs, like one episode of this, one episode of that. He was in episodes of Drop Dead Diva, Burn Notice, and The Originals, which is a Vampire Diaries spinoff, and The Walking Dead.
And then we have Kenesha Thompson as Denise. She's done a lot of voice work for anime like Dragon Ball and One Piece. She's also appeared in an episode of Grey's Anatomy. Sounds like she's also like a character actor slash voice actor.
Yeah. And she's done a lot more voice work than actually just appearing on things. Yeah.
Oh, I think I did. Yeah. It was a lot of anime.
Mm-hmm. So the movie opens and we see this man and he's rolling a shopping cart full of cans into this yard of this apartment complex. And he's trying to collect some trash, but then he encounters these fast moving people who attack him and they drag his body off. They're probably vampires. And then we meet Shauna and Pedro, who are two teenagers, and they're hanging out on the roof of a hotel in the French Quarter in New Orleans. And Shauna's voiceover tells us that they often spend summer days like that, where they sneak onto the roof of some bougie rooftop and just kind of chill out. We also learn that Pedro is gay, and Shauna just got her boobs. That's kind of their conversation, like, oh, you got those things now, you should, you know, put them out or something. And she says, the summer I got breasts, that was the same summer I fought vampires. So immediately we know this is a coming of age story and also vampires. Yay.
Huzzah. So then the opening credits begin, which includes a series of headlines about racial injustices, Katrina, slavery, Black Lives Matter protests in response to police killings of Black people, and something about the last housing development standing with people trying to save the Ombro, which is the complex the man was murdered at in the opening. As they walk home, Shauna says she's going to visit her mom at the Ombro. Pedro convinces her to go to a party that night because she loves to dance, and also, it's summer, parties are fun. They agree to meet at 7 o'clock. I have to say the peer pressure from Pedro is very real.
Like, yeah, he's very much like, you have to come. It's a party. It's going to be amazing. You can't not be there.
Yeah. And it just reminded me of the fact that like I got bribed to go to my prom with a very wicked pillar dress with a cute black mesh overlay. So in order for my mother to buy that dress for me, she said I had to go to the prom. And I was like, ugh, okay. And I think I went to one party in high school, and I don't remember if it was senior year, right at like the end. I think it was. I think it was like we just graduated.
But okay.
Yeah, that was it. All of my party and fun was contained to the computer and the internet. So
yeah, I didn't go to a lot.
No regrets. No regrets.
I didn't go to a lot of parties either. I was invited to a couple, and like, I don't know. I wasn't a popular kid by any means, but my high school was really small, and I don't know, people kind of just friend groups overlapped and stuff, but I just didn't have a lot of interest. But sometimes friends would drag me out to things and I would go. So
yeah, sometimes my friends learned that they had to just kind of show up at my door. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and drag me out.
One of my friends especially would just show up and honk her horn, and I would be like in my pajamas, like on my computer in my bedroom, and I would like look outside and see her car there and be like, ah, oh, crap. And then I'd have to like put on clothes and go. So it's just really funny. I guess thank God for friends that drag you out of the house. At the Ombro, there are a few protesters trying to save the building. And an older man, Babineau, gives Shauna a pamphlet and tells her that she's never too young to fight for what she deserves. In a voiceover, she says, if you'd have asked me back then, I would have told you those people were crazy, because she doesn't think the Ombro is worth saving. It's falling apart and it's teeming with drug dealers. She walks past the toppled cart of cans that belonged to the man who was attacked the night before, which I thought was a nice touch. And then she sees Chris Thompson, who is a guy she clearly likes.
Shauna finds her mom, Denise, who is an addict. Shauna told her she brought her stuff, but not money, which is what her mom wants. Denise tells Shauna that she's better, although she's very clearly having withdrawals.
Yeah, she does not look better. It's really kind of sad. But
oh,
yeah.
So sad. Shauna says maybe she can just come home then, because they all miss her. Her mom shows her a locket that she has with the photos of her children inside. People have told her to sell it for money, but she says that she never will. Reluctantly, Shauna gives her mom some money and her mom runs out of the room.
Yeah, it's a really sweet scene. I kind of condensed it a lot. They have a good conversation. Mm-hmm. But it's just really sad because you can tell that the mom is trying to hold it together for her and try and act like she's okay. And she's clearly not okay. And she's clearly jonesing for a hit. And she's just like searching everywhere for money so she can go get like a little, you know, bit of relief. And it's just really sad. And it's really well done. And it's really sad too, because Shauna kind of takes her at her word when she says she's okay. And she's like, well, then you can come back home.
Yeah.
Mom's like,
yeah, no. I like that Shauna's a bit naive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do like that. But yeah, I love this scene too. And I was pleasantly surprised to find this film teeming with real people and real problems.
Yeah, it's kind of nice because it's got this vampire problem, but then also a bunch of like actual real life issues that these people are trying to deal with in addition to vampires.
Mm-hmm. As Shauna's leaving, she sees a door that's been nailed shut with the warning "Keep Out" painted on it. She hears something banging and looks through the slats. She sees red eyes and hears a hissing.
Oh. Mm. So over dinner with her dad, Steven, and her brother, Jamal, Shauna asks if maybe mom can come home soon. But Steven explains that their mom still has stuff she needs to figure out on her own. She kind of mentions her day, and she mentions seeing Chris, and Jamal tells her that she has no chance with Chris. He likes the lighter-skinned Creole girls. Steven snaps at him, telling him that he's going to give his sister a complex.
I love sad dad Steven.
Yeah.
Like he is just doing his best. Like, he clearly loves his wife, Denise, but had to put up firm boundaries. And I really respect that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, he made some kind of casserole, and there's like kind of this running joke that he's not a good cook, mm-hmm. but he's trying his best. He's got two teenage kids. His wife is having serious addiction problems, and like, he's just doing what he can to keep everything afloat.
Yeah.
I really like him too.
Yeah. And I like the way that he speaks to his children too. Like, he respects them, and you know, he, like how he told Jamal, like, don't, you know, like, that's not polite. Like, that's not nice, you right. know? But yeah, I like him. Like him a lot. So at the club, Shauna sees Chris again, and Pedro convinces her to talk to him. She tries, but is really awkward.
It's so awkward. It's the worst.
It's so cringe. Like, I was like, oh, girl, I've been there. I have totally been there. But yeah, Chris doesn't even know who she is at first. She says she saw him today at the Ombro, but he insists it was not him, which she eventually catches on to.
Yeah.
Then Shauna tells him that she likes his shape, when she meant to say shirt, and she retreats, completely mortified.
Mm-hmm.
She spies Pedro flirting with some guy, so she decides to walk home alone. No.
Yeah, yeah, not the smartest move, but I kind of get it. Like, she just wants to get out of there. Mm-hmm. Pedro's clearly having a moment with some dude and flirting and having fun. She doesn't want to ruin that, so she just takes off, which I get totally. So as she's walking home, a man pops out of the bushes to ask Shauna for money. She tells him she doesn't have anything and keeps walking. But a moment later, she hears a scream, and she turns around and she sees him on the ground with two men attacking him. She yells at the attackers to leave him alone. One of them stands and his eyes glow. As she's backing away from him, she backs into another vampire who growls at her, revealing a mouthful of sharp teeth, and bites her neck. Also, Shauna's voiceover lets us know that his skin was freezing and touching it felt like cold leather.
When I saw this scene, it was abundant that the trend for the vampires is to attack the houseless population, which is totally fucked up, especially since the houseless population in this area are predominantly people of color, but so are the vampires. So I was very like confused and like, oh man, this is fucked up, you know?
But it makes sense though, because if vampires are attacking a certain group of people, those are the group of people that are also going to be turned, right?
Right, right.
More likely than not, anyway.
Sure.
So headlights shine on them and a car horn honks. At first, I thought it was someone coming to like attack the vampires, like some kind of vampire hunter that was rolling up in a car. Mm-hmm. But it's just a car that is trying to drive, and they are in the middle of the street. So the car drives off, but the vampire also runs away. So it works, even though it probably wasn't intentional.
Mm.
Shauna runs home and she checks the wound in the mirror, wondering if she was really just bitten by a vampire. She washes the wound and is shocked that vampires are real. And the wound is also continually seeping, like it won't heal, which I think is a really cool detail. She covers the windows of the house with newspaper to block out the sun, and then she tries to stay awake. Her dad gets home really early in the morning. It seems like he works in a hotel. Like, he was wearing, like, a hotel name tag, and, like, he probably
Like, the night shift concierge, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he works at the front desk. He's probably, like, a night auditor guy. It's probably his job. But he walks in the door and notes that she's up early, and he's like, what happened to your neck? And so she lies and says that it was an accident with her curling iron,
which is hilarious because her hair is completely in braids.
Yeah. And her dad sees the newspaper on the window and is like, what is this? And he tears it down, and she's like, no. But the sunlight doesn't hurt her at all. It hits her arm and it's fine. So she's super relieved that she's not a vampire now who's going to burst into flames. I do love how genre savvy Shauna is. I mean, you can't be a teenager today and not know what a vampire is. So they all kind of have to be. But I thought it was really well done. And I loved how, like, she's like, oh, no, OK, cover the windows. And then when the sunlight hits her, she's just ready to, like, have it start burning. And it doesn't. And she's so relieved. I thought it was great.
I had the same thing in my notes. So high five for genre savvy heroines.
Yay.
So Shauna goes to Pedro and tells him that on her way home from the party, she was attacked by a group of vampires. Pedro laughs, but she shows him the wound, which is still seeping blood, and says it won't heal right. She calls them homeless vampires, and Pedro jokes that she looked homeless in the outfit she was wearing last night. That's when Shauna realizes that they're targeting unhoused people and drug addicts, and that might be why they let her go. They realized she wasn't one of them. Pedro realizes if they're going after addicts, and Shauna realizes what he means. They might go after her mom.
Yeah, Pedro's reaction is kind of perfect. He's like, ha ha, no, wait, what?
Uh-oh. They go to the Ombro, but Shauna's mom, Denise, isn't in her room. They find her sleeping on a couch, and Shauna tells her she needs to come back home. She notices the necklace is gone, but decides it doesn't matter. Then she notices her mom has the same kind of seeping wound she has. Shauna shows her the bite on her neck, but then grabs for her mom's hand, which feels like cold leather.
Uh-oh.
Her mom's eyes glow, and she has sharp teeth. At the sight of Shauna's blood seeping, she attacks Shauna, pushing her against the wall. Shauna snags the curtain as she falls, tearing it down. The sunlight burns Denise, setting her aflame. Flailing and panicked, she bursts through the window and lands on the ground below, burning up. And the scene was, like, really intense, and I felt so awful for both Denise and Shauna. Like, there's no hope for recovery or reuniting with her family. I was like, no.
Yeah, I know. It's really sad. It's also really well done because, like, we know she was bitten and she's fine. So she first sees the wound. It's kind of like, oh, and then she's kind of like, oh, shit, though. This is not the same. And then she just bursts into flames and she falls out of the window on fire and lands on the ground as, like, this burning husk. And it's, like, got to be so traumatic. Mm-hmm. And it's just so dramatic. It's really well done. That was the point where I was like, OK, this movie is not playing around, and I dig it.
Yeah.
So on a hotel roof, Shauna cries and Pedro holds her. Later, the cops arrive at their house to tell the family of the death. They don't know whether it was an accident or a suicide, but Shauna knows it was a murder because whoever turned her into a vampire killed her. After the funeral, Shauna's father brings her to a foundation where a house used to be. It was where he, her mom, and Jamal lived before Hurricane Katrina. Stephen tells Shauna that her mother was an adult, so ultimately, she's responsible for her own mistakes. But there were systemic issues at play. She was unable to get the help she needed after Katrina and the trauma that it caused. But she called Shauna her miracle baby and said that Shauna saved her life. He gives her some of her mom's jewelry that he kept so she wouldn't sell it. And the jewelry box includes the locket because the police found the locket among the mom's things. Benny tells Shauna that she needs to be brave, and they hug.
I will riot if anything happens to this sweet, sad dad.
I know, he's so great. And like, this whole exchange was really good because they don't go super into detail, but you basically learn that the mom may have been having some kind of mental health issues. Then Katrina happened, and just the PTSD of that whole situation led her into doing drugs, and she just wasn't able to get help. And so you can totally see the line of how the systemic racism in society just completely caused her downfall.
Yeah. Deciding she needs info on vampires, Shauna reaches out to a white girl, Grania, who hosts a vampire book club in an abandoned church.
So awesome.
Yeah. Shauna and Pedro go meet her after a meeting. Grania has a whole cart of vampire books.
Which I totally want. I was trying to look and see which books were on there, too. I was, like, pausing it, and I'm like, wait, which ones are on there? It's pretty good.
They sit and talk about vampires. Grania tells them there's really no consensus on how someone gets turned from human to vampire, but there's a school of thought that you have to be totally drained of blood and replaced with vampire blood, or you have to be bitten and venom has to overtake your system. Shauna asks if there's anything she can tell her for sure, like why one person would turn into a vampire but another wouldn't even if they both got bitten. Grania says they have to die. That's what all the stories have in common. Shauna then asks how to kill a vampire. Grania says sunlight is debatable, and Pedro says, trust me, it ain't.
So good. I love that.
Besides sunlight, there's fire, decapitation, or a wooden stake through the heart. Shauna asks, what if you wanted to catch a vampire and keep it alive? Both Grania and Pedro ask, why would anyone want to do that?
Yeah. So first, I would 100% join this book club. I would be there every week constantly. Yeah,
big same.
Yeah. And second, I just kind of love how she's like going through. She's like, well, according to Twilight, it's like this. According to Anne Rice, it's like this. According to these other books. And she just like has like a million books that she's like pulling off her little cart. And I was like, oh, man, I love this girl. And I love her vampire book collection. So outside, Shauna gives Pedro a list of stuff they need, including holy water, garlic, silver chains, snacks, and steaks. I love that she has snacks on the list. Gotta be prepared.
Gotta be prepared.
Except Shauna can get the silver chains herself, so she tells him not to worry about it. Then Chris shows up at Shauna's house. His mom sent over red beans and rice and was sorry to hear that Denise died. Apparently, Chris's mom and Denise used to be friends before she got into drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Chris asks if there's more information as to how it happened, like if it was suicide or an accident or what. And Shauna tells him that her mother wouldn't do it to herself. He's like, well, if you ever catch wind of who did it, I'll have your back. She asks if he means that.
The two of them go to the Ombro and meet Pedro, who's waiting and surprised to see Chris. Pedro asks Shauna why she brought him, and she's like, hey, man, we're not the strongest, fastest people.
We need some backup, my friend.
Yeah. And Chris has some nice muscles.
Yes, he's very muscular.
Chris asks where the guy who did it is at. Shauna says she doesn't know if he's the guy who did it, but he might know who did. Chris pulls the wood off the door where Shauna first saw the red eyes. They walk into the room with flashlights. The windows are covered and the place is dark. Chris asks how she knows the dude even stays there. They hear a noise and are about to leave when a vampire jumps out at them. He's an older man, maybe the one who was collecting cans at the very beginning of the film. He attacks Chris, but Shauna wraps a silver chain around his neck, which burns the vampire smoking against his skin.
And then we get a little bit of a time jump, and Chris and Shauna have obviously been talking, and he's like, you killed your own mom? But Shauna argues it's really whoever made her a, and Chris fills in, vampire. They have the vampire Marvin tied up, and she shows him a photo of her mother. Marvin says he doesn't know the woman, and he's never turned anyone. Shauna asks who did it, and he says, if I tell you, they'll kill me. They shove garlic at him, which he says feels like being tear gassed by the police. Marvin eventually tells them that it's a guy named Lefrak. He's building an army, enlisting any unhoused person or person down on their luck. He's staying in an old mansion down in the French Quarter. And then he tells them that he hopes they do kill Lefrak because he's heard that if he dies, all the vampires he's turned will return to normal. which is the kill the head vampire or the head vampire, and all the other vampires will revert theory, which rarely seems to work out, but is a nice thing to believe, I guess. Chris and Shauna decide to stake Marvin. Pedro doesn't want to kill Marvin because, look, he's talking to them. He seems pretty chill. He seems fine. Like, why can't they just leave him? But Shauna grabs Pedro and holds him in front of Marvin, who, overcome with bloodlust, tries to attack. Shauna stakes him, and at first it doesn't seem to work. But then suddenly, he explodes into dust. And then Chris gives her his number because he wants to help kill Lefrak.
I laughed so fucking hard at the staking scene because Shauna stakes him and he howls and he writhes and he's making like this huge fuss. But then he like realizes, oh, nothing's happening. And then he just like looks down at his chest and then suddenly Marvin just goes poof, like a vacuum bag exploding. It really just like it caught me off guard and I was howling.
Well, it's so funny too, because like we don't really know the vampire rules of this world yet, and neither do the vampires.
Yeah.
So they're just kind of like, oh no, I've been staked. Oh wait, no, I'm okay. And then he explodes. And it totally is like a vacuum bag, because when they come out of the room, she's like covered in like vampire dust all over her face. And it's just hilarious. It's really
funny. It just looks like dust bunnies. So they find Lefrak's mansion. Pedro researched the history of the house. The man who built it was one of the most notorious slave owners in Louisiana and even built an underground tunnel system to hide his slaves from Union soldiers. Gross.
I know. He had like over 400 enslaved people or something, like just an obscene amount. Not that any amount is okay, but like clearly he was the most evil of the evil.
So they stand outside the mansion and it gets dark. They watch as pairs of victims come out of the house with bite marks. Shauna realizes to get inside, she needs another girl and knows who will do it, Grania. She meets with Grania again, who tells her some books say vampires can use psychic attacks on victims. She thinks Lefrak may be using some kind of mind control to make these people forget about being bitten. She tells her if Lefrak tries to hypnotize her, just think of a memory from her past to keep her grounded. Grania and Shauna go shopping and work on their entry plan, while Pedro and Chris work on the exit play. Shauna makes stakes and is unsure how this will work, because she says, I'm not Buffy.
She doesn't need to be. She's great.
Yeah. Doing just fine, girl. Just doing just fine. And let's be real, Buffy had help.
Buffy had a lot of help. She also had, like, superpowers, right? Because she's supernatural slayer, so she has like extra strength and stuff.
Yeah.
So outside the mansion, Chris helps tape the stake to Shauna's leg since her outfit is too tight and revealing to conceal it. They have a moment that's kind of sweet, and she's like, why are you helping? And he says, let's just go kill some vampires. Also, a guy in a taxi seems to be watching them, and he's parked in front of the house, so that seems a little sus. So Shauna and Grania knock on the door. After they knock, Grania wants to back out, but a bouncer-type guy answers. He realizes they're looking for Lefrak and is like, you got your days mixed up. You have to come back on Thursday. Shauna insists that they were told to come tonight. So they finally get let inside. Inside, there are stacks of Save the Ombro pamphlets, and some kind of meeting is happening in the next room. Shauna sees Babineau, the man who gave her a pamphlet, leading the meeting, and he sees her.
Once upon a time, a trio of bards, the narrators three, were called upon to unite the realms with an episode-by-episode deep-dive commentary on the fairytale-laden soap opera, Once Upon a Time.
Tune in for weekly retrospect sprinkled with judgmental fondness and hysterical disappointment as the narrators three laugh, throw shade, and have the occasional emotional breakdown.
If you find tales of costuming, character takedowns, and plot devices that come with a price utterly charming, the narrators three invite you to join them for Once Upon a Rewatch, available on all major platforms where podcasts can be found.
The bouncer comes in and asks who wants to go first. Shauna kind of is like, I guess me. So he leads Shauna up to a bedroom. Lefrak appears. He's also an asshole, and he's like, I don't usually like girls as dark as you. He's great on all levels. But he sits on the bed and gestures for her to sit next to him. Then he sees that she's wearing silver jewelry. She's wearing the locket from her mom and is like, no silver. So she removes it and sets it on the mantle. He takes her hand and his skin feels like cold leather. Outside, Chris and Pedro take their garlic powder and they get ready to start the exit plan.
Inside, Lefrak starts to touch Shauna's thigh and she says she needs to use the restroom. She ducks into the bathroom and grabs the stake and then practices using it a few times. She comes back out. Lefrak tells Shauna to relax and look deep into his eyes. She thinks of her mother playing with her in the yard with bubbles when she was a small child, as Lefrak tells her she won't remember him. He asks if she knows where she is. She says she can't remember. His teeth turn from normal to sharp shark teeth, and his eyes glow red. He bites her, and she holds the stake in one hand.
Yeah, we didn't really mention, we kind of mentioned it, but like the vampires in this world have normal teeth and then they turn into these like mouthful of sharp razor teeth. It's very horrifying.
Mm-hmm. Downstairs, the house is filling with smoke. And I think it's the smoke that's from granulated garlic powder.
Yeah, I think so. Because I think they're somehow pumping the garlic powder in. I'm not entirely sure how it's working, but
I think they're doing it through the vents, like the outside vents.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. Because yeah,
and then and the windows, like, because like, you know, it's New Orleans, it's the summer, so it's hot. So like they're just boop, 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 like throwing it in through vents and open windows.
Yeah.
So Grania first begins to cough. The older man, Babineau, opens the door to air it out and doesn't see Pedro and Chris hiding on the patio.
Whew, close. Close call.
Mm-hmm. Shauna manages to stake Lefrak, who screams so loud it fills the house. Chris and Pedro charge in and start flinging garlic powder around, which wards off the vampires as they pull Grania out. Lefrak stares at Shauna and asks who she is. She says she's Denise's daughter. He asks who Denise is and then turns into dust. Shauna, Chris, Pedro, and Grania run out. Babineau calls someone, telling them four children are leaving the house and orders them to be brought to him. Dead or alive, it doesn't matter. He is the lead vampire.
Yeah, we learn he's a vampire. He wants those kids. Also, I thought it was really funny when Lefrak is just like, who's Denise?
Yeah.
Like, it just shows what a thoughtless douchebag he is. Like, he doesn't even, I mean, we don't know if he's the one who turned her, but still, he just doesn't even have any idea what she's talking about. I thought that was
yeah
great.
And he goes poof.
Mm-hmm. The gang goes back to Shauna's house. Chris says he guesses that now they know if they kill the leader, stuff stays the same, except maybe they didn't kill the leader. They look at photos that Pedro has of the construction of Lefrak's mansion and they see Babineau in them. Back in the 1800s, he was a slave in the house over 100 years ago. They think he's the guy in charge. But Pedro's like, yeah, but we can't go back now. Someone knocks on the door and they all start to panic. But Grania's like, they can't come in unless they're invited. They can't come in unless they're invited. It's fine. Jamal is confused. He has no idea what's going on because his sister just brought these friends over. And now there's people like banging on the door and they're talking about vampires. He's really not sure what's happening. A vampire jumps through the window and attacks Jamal. Others break down the door. Shauna punches the vampire who's attacking her brother, while both Grania and Pedro try to ward off the attackers, which is pretty hilarious. The whole, like, I don't know, it kind of reminded me of Lost Boys when they're all just, like, fighting the vampires, but they're all just doing what they can. Then a man bursts into the house with a single stick that has this metal stake on the end, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
He kills the vampires, who do their ear-piercing scream before they turn to dust. Tunde, the vampire who saved them, is the taxi driver who was quote-unquote stalking Shauna. He tells them he's over 800 years old, and he's been at war with Babineau for over a century.
Yay! I was hoping the taxi driver wasn't a human thrall, and I really like Tunde.
Yeah, he's a cool character, and I also really like that that guy wasn't working for Babineau, because that's what I assumed originally, too.
I know, and I was like, no, but he's already got, like, all these people working for him.
Yeah.
So Tunde tells them Babineau was a slave who was attacked by a vampire. Once he was turned, he killed his master and took over the estate. After Katrina, he got worse. As the divide between the haves and the have-nots continues to grow, he continues to consolidate power. He's building an army of the down and out. He's a vampire supremacist, one of the last vampire coven leaders to think that way. So this is like a really interesting backstory. And when he was telling it, I had this quote from The Dark Knight that came to mind. It's like, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a very Eric Killmonger vibe to Babineau's story. And that's the villain in the first Black Panther movie, for those of you who don't know. But like a victim who was able to take control of their destiny, but decided intense, violent vengeance was the answer. Like, I know intrinsically there is some vindication to Babineau's ideas.
Yeah.
And his feelings are totally valid.
That's the thing. He's like, he's been through all kinds of stuff. He's seen the worst of humanity, right? Like, he's absolutely seen and experienced the worst of it firsthand. Like, he was enslaved. He's seen how systemic racism has played out over the years with, like, Jim Crow laws. He saw how Katrina played out and how, like, it was largely Black people and people of color and marginalized people who were affected and killed because of systemic issues that weren't, you know, there was no help. And so it's really hard to be like, wow, he's the worst. Like, obviously, I don't believe in vampire supremacy. Because I'm a human and I think, you know, humans are pretty great too. But you can totally see why he's come to that position.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They ask Tunde why he's not eating them. And he tells them with modern technology, it's archaic to eat humans. Also, he informs them that the sun has not affected him in 500 to 600 years because vampires with lots of melanin are not usually affected by the sun. And he's got lots of melanin. He's very dark skin, dark complected.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like it takes a couple hundred years. So dark skinned vampires are affected when they're younger, but as they get older, they can kind of withstand the sun. So I guess pale white vampires are SOL. Just kind of funny, actually.
Which is a great take. Yeah.
It's a great take because then it's kind of like, oh, well, all those stories about, you know, vampires who are pale in life and can't come out in the day. Well, that makes sense because they're never going to get that ability.
Right, right. Chris calls Shauna Wesley because she's mad black like Wesley Snipes. Tunde tells them of a princess in his mortal village back in Nigeria whose skin was dark as night and all the other girls were jealous. She was the most beautiful girl he had ever seen. Shauna, he says, is not unlike her.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to have him be like, no, actually, you're gorgeous. These people are stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I would be curious to know what he does eat. Like, he says eating humans is archaic. So is he drinking vampire blood, donated blood, synthetic blood? I don't know. It's when I get so hung up on vampire rules, but I'm just really curious. I would love to know what he's drinking.
Yeah, we'll talk about it after we go through the summary. But right, I was curious as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a new vampire breaks in and hisses at them. He's Yakubu, a friend of Tunde's. He tells Yakubu to watch the kids as he is going to kill Babineau. Shauna wants to go with him. He tells her what she did with Lefrak was very brave, but now she needs to stay out of the fight.
I love Tunde. I love that he just comes Tunde. In and is like, saves their butts and is like, look, you kids have done an awesome thing. You're very brave. You killed a vampire. Very proud of you. Now stay out of this mess. And my vampire bodyguard here is going to watch you so you don't get into trouble.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, Yakubu comes in like ready to kick ass and he's like, all right, stand down.
He's like, nope, they're just kids.
Just kids.
Just make sure they don't do anything, burn down the house or stupid. Try and leave. Yeah. So Shauna brings some dinner for Pedro and Chris and it's something her dad made. It does not look appetizing. So Pedro opts to go take a shower. He's like, you know what? I'm not that hungry. I'm going to go hop in the shower. Chris and Shauna start talking, and he tells her that he wanted to help her because of his brother, who's also an addict. He was living at the Ombro, but he came home last week. Chris doesn't know who to be mad at. His brother, the dealers, the crooked cops. At least Shauna has someone to take it out on. And then he tells her that she's beautiful. And she kind of finally accepts that too, which I thought was sweet. They're about to kiss when Pedro interrupts them.
Mm.
And then we cut to the mansion and we see vampires shrieking and Tunde's crew is killing the enemy vampires, but they realize Babineau isn't there. Meanwhile, back at Shauna's house, the kids realize that Babineau would know about the tunnels under the mansion because obviously he was probably forced to help build them. And they need to tell Tunde. Shauna still has stakes, but Pedro thinks it's a bad idea to go. They get Shauna's stakes and some garlic powder. Jamal uses some of the garlic to stun Yakubu so they can get out. Outside, Grania says that she's not going with them. Vampires aren't fun in real life. They thank her for her help, and she wishes them luck as they head to the mansion.
So I wonder if Grania ducking out is supposed to be seen as a metaphor for white privilege, like white women who borrow from black culture, but then like leave it when they have no longer need of it, you know? Like there's this justified complaint that when people borrow from black culture, they can metaphorically, of course, put it back on a shelf, you know, and then can't get like clocked or in trouble. But, you know, actual black people, they're like, yeah, well, I can't just put my blackness aside, mm-hmm. you know? So I was sort of wondering about that, like if that was meant to be seen that way. Like Grania's a fine character. You know, this sure. is not me hating on her. I'm just wondering if that was symbolically supposed to be that, like it was only the people of color continuing on this fight. Yeah. And she like leaves and it's like, okay, well, this is no longer fun and convenient, you know, fun for me. You know, it's kind of like white allies and stuff saying like, oh, well, I bought my Black Lives Matter t-shirt and I went to one march, but you know.
Yeah, I think you were talking about appropriation earlier, but I do mm-hmm. think that this is a good metaphor for white privilege because you can kind of fight the fight, but then you can go home and you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, unfortunately, you know, you can't go home and not worry about it if you are in that community and you are affected by those problems directly.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think you're right on there. And I love Grania too, but yeah, I think that is exactly what is going on here. Like, she's like, yeah, I want to go fight the vampires. Wait, this is hard and I don't want to do it. And also, I don't have to worry about it. So I'm out, guys. Sorry.
Yeah. right.
Is fair in character, but also is a good metaphor for that whole situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So outside the mansion, they see a vampire disappear into some bushes. They realize that must be the entrance to the tunnels and go inside. The tunnels lead to a room full of coffins. There are also bones littering the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Past the coffins is another room, and they come across vampires feeding, including Babineau. Shauna runs at him, but he throws her down. As he bends to grab her, Pedro stakes him, but he misses. Babineau tosses him down and tells his vampire minions to feast, and then they all jump all over Pedro.
No, Pedro!
Pedro! Shauna cries Pedro's name and tries to rouse Chris, who's unconscious. Shauna hides as Babineau follows her. He knows only a loss would make her that angry, so he asks who she lost. She tells him about her mother. He tells her it was a gift, but Shauna tells him she's dead. He says every cause has its martyrs. He further says that he sees the way people like them are subjugated from slavery to Jim Crow. When Katrina didn't drown them, they turned to development to build them out. By the way, I do love that you have written Katrina several times as Katarina.
I know. It's autocorrect, and I don't know why it's autocorrecting to that, because I don't type the name Katarina ever, but I don't know why.
That's all right.
We all know what I mean.
Yes. Shauna asks, why now? She argues that people want to make a difference. The protests, the marches. Babineau scoffs, saying he's seen all of the protests over the centuries, and they always get snuffed out. He's trying to stoke the flames and keep it burning. Shauna tells him Tunde has already destroyed his army. Babineau says he'll just build another one. It's New Orleans. There will never be a shortage of the down and out. He has nothing but time. He tells her she could join him. She could lead by his side. With her determination, she'd be a powerful vampire. And with her skin, she'd be daywalking by the next day. Shauna says she'd rather die. She attacks him, but he hits her, sending her down to the ground. She crawls away, and he finds her and snarls. She shoves her silver locket into his mouth. He stumbles back as the silver burns him. Then she stakes him successfully. He shrieks and turns to dust. Chris calls for Shauna. She runs for Pedro, who's covered in blood and bite marks. He hugs his body as she cries.
Then they're at Pedro's funeral and walk a funeral procession down the street. She bends down at her mom's grave. Her voiceover tells us that she lost her mother and her best friend, but she gained some people too. Her relationship with her brother is better. She and Grania became friends for life. And then we see Chris and Shauna passing out pamphlets in front of the Ombro. And we learn that he has to take his brother to an NA meeting later, so they make plans to hang out later that night. When Shauna gets home, the house is empty, and she's really excited for Chris to come over, and she has the whole house to herself, so it's going to be perfect. But then someone knocks on the door, and when she answers, it's not Chris. It's Pedro. Yes. He is a vampire. We are all shocked. No, we were not shocked. I definitely knew he was going to come back. I was just waiting.
I figured. I just didn't like how gruesome that they made him look.
Yeah. It's true, but yeah, not surprised. And that's the end. That's the end of the movie. So Shauna has accepted herself and the color of her skin and is now helping her community. And also her best friend is a vampire.
So we can go through the vampire lore that this movie set up for us.
Sure.
It's unclear how vampires are made, but it definitely takes more than one bite. And probably likely they need to get drained.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, I think Grania was onto something that you have to die,
mm-hmm.
but the logistics of how that work are never really explained, which is fine. We don't need it explained. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things I'm always like, wait, how does that happen? But yeah. It does make sense that Shauna wouldn't have turned because she was bitten and only a little was drunk out of her and she was fine. She didn't die. So She's good.
Vampires can be killed by sunlight and stakes through the heart. Sunlight makes them burst into flames. Stakes turn them to dust. But older vampires, particularly with darker skin, can withstand the sun. Garlic burns them, or at least like it's very much like tear gas.
Mm-hmm.
They do not need to be invited.
Nope, learn that the hard way.
Mm-hmm. Their teeth look normal until they're ready to feed, at which point they turn into a mouthful of razor teeth, not unlike a shark's. Mm. And they're vulnerable to silver.
Yep. Yep, pretty solid vampire lore. I like it. I have no complaints. So, who's your favorite character?
I mean, it'd be Tunde and Yakubu if they had more screen time. But Shauna, for sure. She's vulnerable in a real teenage way. She's savvy and she's very courageous.
Yeah, I like her a lot. And you can kind of see, like, she's a little naive. She has that teen self-hatred that most teens have. And she overcomes it as the movie goes on, which I thought was great. She's definitely really smart and good at solving problems, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I also love Grania, but I'm a sucker for the vampire-loving character who learns that vampires are not necessarily awesome. Maybe right. You don't want to be hanging out with them. And I just love her book club and cart full of vampire books. So I'm curious if that book club is going to continue now that she knows vampires are real.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not, but who knows?
So what scene was your favorite?
Man, it's tough. I really liked the scene after Shauna is bit, where she like goes into her mirror and is freaking out about, was I really just bitten by a vampire? That doesn't happen. I thought that was really good. And I thought it was really funny how she like covers the windows and kind of knows what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then is very relieved. I also liked the scene with her and her dad at the foundation of their old house. I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah, that one's one of my favorite scenes, and I also really love the scene where Tunde comes to rescue the gang. Because I was really honestly just happy that we actually had vampires to root for.
I know. I feel like in so many of these movies, it's like all or nothing. Like even either all vampires are evil or all vampires are like, not all vampires are friendly, but you know, more of them are more varied. It's always like one or the other, whereas this one, it feels like, oh, there's different vampire covens, and some of them kill humans, and some of them don't kill humans anymore, and it's just really fascinating world building.
Yeah.
And also, it's nice to have vampires we can root for, like you said. Was there anything in this movie that didn't work for you?
Like, the ending was a little too goofy for me for such serious topics. Like, I wish the filmmakers had gone more horror commentary rather than try to cram in some camp and teen romance. Like, I get it. It's a teen coming of age film, but I just felt that there was like a conflict of priorities and tone for a film that is just under 90 minutes.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. I thought it coalesced together really well. Like, I really like that it is just your standard teen fights vampires movie, but then it also deals with all these problems because that is real life for a lot of mm-hmm. people. Like, you just have all this stuff that is always impacting you no matter what's going on, whether you're going to high school or fighting vampires, it's going to be part of your life. So I thought it was done really well, but I can see how it does feel like a lot is crammed into 90 minutes too.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then the tone had to shift because of it. Because of all the elements that they brought in.
I didn't feel like it shifted so much that it was jarring, though, because I felt like it was always a little campy. Like, you see the red eyes behind the boarded up door and the vampires. I don't know. I thought it was kind of a good balance, but that's me.
Was there anything that you wanted more of?
I mean, not really. I feel like it's pretty solid. I didn't feel like anything was really lacking. I mean, 90 minutes is only so much. Mm-hmm. I think if there is anything I want more of, it's just more of the vampire world. I would love to know more about some of the other covens. I want to know what Tunde's eating.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wanted more Tunde and Yakubu.
Yeah.
Like, they were so interesting. I wish they had come in earlier and that there had been more discussion on the lore and the alternatives to Babino's plans. Like, how are they addressing those issues in the world? You know?
Yeah. If they are at all.
If they are at all. Right. Like, maybe they're just like, leave the humans to their human business. You know, who knows?
So how do you feel that it tackled racism and colorism in the story?
So some of the responses I read complained that the movie was heavy-handed with both, but I disagree. Colorism is an issue that is so rarely talked about in media, and it was refreshing to have a film to not just address it, but build it into the lore of the vampires themselves. Mm-hmm. I thought that was probably the most unique aspect that this film brought to the vampire lore overall. Because I've never heard of that. And I'm like, oh, that's genius. It's like, really, it makes so much sense.
It's really smart. And it's funny because it did kind of remind me of Rashid in Interview with the Vampire, who's like 500 years old and like, oh, the sun doesn't affect me or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, that didn't work because it wasn't built into the lore of the vampires and there's no right. reason for it.
Right.
Whereas here, it's a really specific reason and it makes sense.
Yeah.
So I appreciated it a lot here. I just did think it was funny because I immediately like flashed back, but I was just like, oh no, not again. But yeah, it works here. It works here really mm-hmm. well. It makes sense. And it also fits the theme and the thing that they're discussing too, because it's like, oh, I hate my dark skin. But actually, if you were a vampire, that's a big advantage.
Mm-hmm. As I said before, I wish the racism themes were explored a bit more, even if at the end we saw Shauna becoming bit more involved, like not just to save the Umbra, which is a great start, but like getting involved with like a local Black Lives Matter chapters or starting her own Black Students Union, you know, something like that. Fighting to break down the system through policy rather than violence, like it would have made the theme a little bit more full circle. I mean, it does come full circle with her actually mm-hmm. wanting to save the Umbra.
Yes.
But I don't know. I guess maybe I wish it was a slightly deeper.
I don't know. I felt like that was enough because we do see at the beginning that she is just kind of spending her summer hanging out on rooftop of bougie hotels that they break into mm-hmm. and watching the tourists and, you know, doing that kind of thing, which, I mean, I grew up in a tourist town. I realized there can be not a lot to do. And sometimes it is fun to just go like watch the tourists. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was good that they show her kind of apathetic about the Umbro and even talking about how it's kind of a stain and should just be torn down anyway because it's useless and no one needs it mm-hmm. to realizing that actually it's important for her community and it's important for people who don't have support to have a place to go, mm-hmm. and that she does decide to take some action to try and save it. And who knows, she might do other stuff. I think, like you said, it's a good first step. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they had time to show a bunch of other stuff. So
that's true. That's true. That's very fair.
Building block onto her journey to getting involved in her community, which I thought was good. I also love how the film shows that modern systemic racism has a direct line from slavery. And I agree about the colorism. I think that's a thing that's not often tackled in genre film. And so it's kind of nice to see it brought into the story and have it be something that the protagonist kind of overcomes.
Yeah. Also, I'm pretty disappointed at the overwhelming complaints about these issues in all the articles I read. I'm just like, because of course, the majority of the authors of these articles are not people of color.
Yeah, I didn't read. I tend not to read reviews of things before we record because I'm always like,
no, I did it after, other people. Oh, before we record.
Yeah. I just don't want other people's opinions, but sometimes I'm curious. It kind of depends on the situation. Right. So I don't know. I did look it up and I didn't see a ton about this movie. It is pretty new and it's Amazon Studios. So I don't know that it got a lot of advertising support or anything.
No, I heard that it also kind of got buried because Candyman was released the same week and it tackled very similar issues. So
it was another horror genre thing. So yeah. That's a shame.
It's a shame.
It's a shame because this movie's really fun. It's entertaining, and I feel like it deals with these issues.
And it's this is the first feature film for both the writer and the director. I'm like, have a little bit of grace. This is a great first step of feature length. They've both been doing shorts and TV and such. I'm like, if they team up again, I would be very curious to see where they go.
And the script is super solid. There aren't really a lot of problems.
There was some dialogue stuff that I didn't care for. Sure. Some language that could come off not great. What's her name? Oh god, hold on. when Shauna said quit acting like a girl or something to Pedro or something along those lines, or sure. those hoes,
teens talk, I think, so I'm not super worried about it, but I can see that. I think in terms of the plot, though, we get introduced to the necklace pretty early, and then obviously mm-hmm. the necklace is what saves her in the end. I thought all this stuff was really logical. I never felt like, oh my god, where did that come from, or that
That's
came
true.
Out of nowhere, or
absolutely,
anything like that. So I mean, it's not perfect, and I'm not going to argue it's a perfect script, and I have not gone through it with a fine tooth comb, nor do I have my other podcast co-host Nick ability to be a script supervisor on the fly and just catch all the little issues. So I'm sure there are probably things in here that if I watched it again, I'd be like, wait, what about that? But it's pretty solid and nothing threw me. So I feel like that's good.
Right.
I was not immediately that's what? True. Also, this movie kind of reminded me a little of Attack the Block, which I don't know if you've seen that. Mm-mm. It's John Boyega and Jodie Whittaker. And it's about a group of teenagers who are saving their apartment building from an alien attack.
Oh.
It's really, really good. It's a fun movie. And so if you're looking for another fun movie, I highly recommend that one. So do you have any final thoughts on Black is Night?
Nope. I would definitely recommend it, especially for teens who are getting into vampires or just genre films in general. I think like Lost Girls, it's kind of important for where it stands. It's a good coming of age film. So sure.
yeah
that's who I would probably recommend this the most for, and anyone who really likes vampires, because it adds a depth to the lore.
Sure. Yeah, honestly, I really loved it. I had a really good time watching it. I had a blast. I thought it was really fun just as a vampire movie. And well, it deals with important topics. It never felt preachy to me. You know how sometimes when something mm-hmm. is a horror movie, but it's also has a message, it can feel like that message kind of overwhelms the story. And I felt like it flowed well with the story. And the systemic racism and stuff like that are reasons why Shauna's mom was an addict. And it's why Babineau is the bad guy. So I felt like it really gelled and fit really well.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it's still a fun teenagers fight vampires vampire movie. And I dig it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. More Tunde and Yakuba.
Well, maybe Maybe they'll get a sequel. Probably not because it's Amazon Studios, but like right. if they did, that'd be really cool. Because yeah. I would love to know more about the vampires in the world and stuff like that. So
yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us.
Yeah, thank you all for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this discussion. And if you watch Black as Night or you already have, let us know what you think.
This is Tori and Chell wishing you a fangtabulous evening with vampire wishes and batty nightmares.
This podcast was edited by me, Tori. Our music is edited and mixed by Vikra the Never Living and includes Dark Halloween Night by Chase Allen Willis and Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach, performed by Kevin MacLeod.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you really want to join our hellish crusade, please leave us 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. Be sure to tell your favorite blood-sucking fiends about vampires ruined my life.